the critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Uryu.
We are your TV BFFs, and this is an interview podcast about the TV shows that people love most. Each episode, we bring on a guest to discuss their top six shows of all time based on what we call the BFF criteria. With so much TV out there, we want to know, what are the best shows you've ever seen? What are your absolute favorite shows? And what are the shows you would watch on a loop forever?
That's right. Each episode, our guests will pick two shows in each of the three BFF categories, those being their best, favorite, and forever shows, while choosing from the three genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and all things unscripted. And now, let's get to our guests this week and find out what's in their top six. We are super, super excited to have this guest with us today. He is a fantastic, and not to mention hilariously on-point writer, and I've been a fan since his days at Gawker, and he has a fabulous book out right now that you have to get your hands on. It's called The Housewives, The Real Story Behind The Real Housewives, and it's one of my favorite books that I've read this summer. And he's also the foremost expert on all things Housewives, a real historian, I would say. But he also loves all TV. You can check out his episode recaps on Vulture of Roni and Beverly Hills, and I encourage you to do so because you won't stop laughing. Please welcome Brian J. Moylan.
Oh, hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on, Brian.
Thank you. I'm also recapping the new Gossip Girl. Have you watched the new Gossip Girl?
I haven't watched it. I was planning on starting it while I'm about to leave for vacation today. And I was going to, it's on my list.
Where are you going on vacation?
The North Fork of Long Island, everybody.
Really getting out of the city, you know?
Yeah, getting out of the city.
I mean, it is a different world out there, I'll tell you. Yeah, but Gossip Girl, I highly recommend it. I was a big fan of the original, and the new one is good. I love a trashy teen show. Like, pretty much watch anything with hot guys on it. And so, yeah, lots of trashy teen dramas.
Awesome. I love the original Gossip Girl, too. That was, I basically love anything that came on the CW. I was into Gossip Girl, Vampire Diaries. There was a really great show that was on for a while called, like, it was, like, The Secret Society. They think they were, like, witches or something. I love that. It's on for one season.
Did you watch all that superhero stuff, too? Like, Smallville and whatnot?
I never really did all the superhero stuff, but I kind of wish I had watched Smallville after watching all the NXIVM stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, right. Yeah, like, who is this lady? Oh, yeah. She's on Smallville. Yeah, I am a big comic book fan, but I never watched, like, any of those shows. Mm-mm.
Me either. I kind of stuck with, like, the big tent stuff, like the Marvel, the movies, and now I'm doing those shows, but I never got into, like, the CW superhero stuff.
Yeah, and even, like, the Marvel Netflix shows, like Daredevil and that stuff was awful.
Jessica Jones season one was good. Jessica Jones season one was very good.
Because the Jessica Jones comic book is one of the best of all time. And so they had good material, I think, to work with as opposed to the rest of them.
Brian, we're already getting fast into shows. I absolutely love it. But before we get to your BFF criteria, we want to get to know a little bit more about your personal TV history. And we do that by talking about your almost shows. So these are the shows that did not make your top six, but just missed the cut. So they're not your TV BFFs, but they're still pretty good friends. It sounds like you have a lot of shows that you've enjoyed in your past. So what are some that just were on the outside looking in?
Well, I was an indoor kid growing up, so I watched lots of television, and I used to watch a lot of HBO, and and when you would just like put on HBO and then they would replay the movie. So I'd watch like the same stupid movies over and over again. So like that's like a real basis, but it's not like TV shows. But then when I started my journalism career, I worked at a newspaper called The Washington Blade, and I wrote about television, like gay people television, from like starting in the 2000s, like the early 2000s. And then like that TV column got syndicated, and then I started writing about Project Runway and stuff like that at Gawker. Sure. So I've been writing about television for, oh my God, like 20 years now. I'm so old.
Oh, stop.
And I apologize. And there's like crazy, especially like when I was writing about stuff for the Blade, because in the early 2000s, there were so few gay people on television that like if you had a gay character for one episode or whatever, you had a gay showrunner. What I wrote about it. And so I reviewed like all these shows I barely remember. Like there was some, one about some like gay kid that was on Fox for like three episodes called like Stuart Little or something. I don't know. I think that was a movie about a mouse, maybe. I don't remember. But so one of my almost shows was Game of Thrones, which I was a huge fan of. And
sure.
I recapped one season for somebody, but I don't remember who. But I was like obsessed with it. And so before every season, I would go and watch like all the previous seasons again.
Oh, yeah.
And then like, so I've seen them all like several times, which is something I also did with one of my favorite shows, but I will reserve talking about that. But I love Game of Thrones, but my thing is so much of it, the same thing with Lost. Like I was really obsessed with Lost and like reading all the recaps and fan theories and being into that. And I'm one of those people that hated the Lost finale with such a fiery passion that people are like, should I watch Lost? And I'm like, no, waste of your time. Bye.
Yeah. Watch the first four seasons and then just stop. Pretend it
is. Right. And
there.
Then just be like, who knows what happened? Right. Who knows if there's a smoke monster? I don't know. But so I wasn't as disappointed by the Game of Thrones ending as a lot of people were. Like I was fine with it, but I feel like so much of what drew me into the show was the kind of mystery of it and how is it going to play out and what's going to happen. And then now that I know like how it happens, I'd be curious to like rewatch it all knowing how it all ends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See how they were setting things up.
Yeah.
If they knew. Right.
Yeah. And so I wonder if my feelings for it would be waning now that all the mysteries have been solved like they did for Lost. But I will say the good thing about Lost is that it got me to watch The Leftovers, which is like one of the best shows ever.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Leftovers was, I don't know if we talked about it in our almost episode, Brandy, but it was definitely in the mix.
We didn't.
It was an almost show for me. I don't actually know why it wasn't on my list, my almost shows list. I love The Leftovers. I think you're right. Like Damon Lindelof learned a thing or two and then figured out how to land the plane. You
know what I mean? Well, and like started out like, girl, you're not going to find out. So don't worry. And like, so I was like, okay, now I will focus on everything else. And it like, I hate the, oh, well, you got to watch the first season and then it gets good. Like, fuck you. If it's not good from the beginning, like.
I don't want to.
Yeah, no, but that said, The Leftovers had a bit of a rocky first season, and then it really takes like a left turn starting in season two. And I feel like the second two are some of the best television out there.
Exemplary. But even so, like the first season wasn't bad. It's not like you're saying you need to watch bad TV to get to good TV. Just
no.
Compared to seasons two and three that came after it, it's like, oh, not its strongest, but it's still a solid season of TV. I think it's still very good.
No, absolutely.
I haven't seen The Leftovers, but would you say that, I know it's weird that I haven't seen it because I feel like I watch everything else that comes on HBO, but would you say that like, so it's three seasons total?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like 10 to 12 episodes. So like you can get through it. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy. I mean, I could probably do that in a weekend if I was if I didn't leave the house.
If I put my mind to it, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a complete three. Like you're gonna get your whole story from
It is a contained, like it wasn't canceled. Damon, like he was like, This is what I have, this is what it will be, and it's excellent.
That's appealing.
And there's some great, like, I don't even want to call them bottle episodes or like dream episodes, but they like go on these like crazy journeys and it's very symbolic, like impressionistic almost, where it's like kind of dream logic-y, but also not like dumb, like some of the Sopranos dream sequences. Like, it's really super good and has some amazing like surprises and great characters, and Anne Dowd is in it, and I have a saying, which is never follow Anne Dowd to a second location, because whenever Anne Dowd is around, shit is gonna happen, right? So
her characters at least get into some shit, right?
Oh my god. And then she showed up in Hereditary and I was like, strap in, sister.
We're done.
Anne Dowd is here. It's over. It's over.
Brian, what else was close?
What else was close? Well, I am a big fan of animation.
Ooh, cool.
Starting from like when I was a kid, I was a big cartoon fan. And I love He-Man. I think He-Man made me gay because it's basically like naked muscle dudes and drag queens.
It really is.
And then like She-Ra, and it's like, oh, okay, now there's like a strong female lead. Oh my God. So I was like a big fan of that. I also like, if those didn't make me gay, then Gem and the Holograms made me gay, which is like
one of the best shows ever.
You're out for Brandy. Go for it.
It was, I loved it. When I saw, when you sent your almost shows over and I saw Gem and the Holograms, I was like, oh my God, kindred spirit. Like,
oh my
that
God.
Show is so good.
So here's the thing. I've never seen it. I don't know what it is. This is a blind spot for me. You have to tell me about Gem and the Holograms.
So Gem and the Holograms was a cartoon in the 80s, mm-hmm. mid 80s. And it was like when MTV was big. And so they were like, we are going to make a show for girls, basically. But it's like music videos. So there was Gem and the Holograms, which was one band. And then the Misfits, mm-hmm. which were like the punk rock band. And they were warring girl bands. And there, each episode, there would be like a little song and a music video. Mm-hmm. There are a few that I might be able to sing for you mm-hmm. still to this day.
Yeah.
And like the theme song was amazing. The Misfits song, there are like YouTube playlists of all the Misfits like video. The Misfits were way cooler than Gem and the Holograms, yeah. first of all. And songs were amazing. And there are like YouTube playlists where you could just watch like every Misfits song, and they are fucking jams. Like, I love them so much. And the clothes are outrageous. They're these like super insane like 80s ensembles, and like the hair is all multicolored, and like, oh my God, it's just the best.
But also, like, the entire conceit of Gem and the Holograms falls apart if you really think about it, because Gem was the alter ego of Jerrica Benton, whose yes. dad owned a big record label, but then okay. her dad died and left her this machine called Synergy.
He left her a record label, an orphanage, in a machine.
I forgot about the orphanage.
That's what she got from the dead dad and her fucking annoying sister Kimber, who was like always like 2 seconds away from lezzing out with Stormer, one of the Misfits.
Synergy could create holograms.
Okay.
So Jerrica had these earrings and she goes, Showtime, Synergy. And then Synergy would create the holograms, which like made total sense when I was 7. I was like, yes, of course. But now I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Everything was holograms. So like, how were they solid?
And also like, why did Jerrica need, why couldn't Jerrica just be Jerrica and like lead the band? Like, why does she need a hologram to lead this like, girl group?
Right.
Yeah, Dan, you should check. If you're getting more into like animation, I highly recommend the She-Ra reboot on Netflix. It's
I am.
So good.
I've been on an animation kick. Yeah. Brian, I'm midway through a Star Wars The Clone Wars watch right now. So like, I'm deep into some animation stuff right now.
I started that. I need to like pick it up. I've been sidelined. I like to fall asleep watching cartoons because like nothing bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so like, I can just like put, and then you can just like pick it up.
Yeah.
And so I like put on a cartoon and like fall asleep. And so it takes me like a long time to watch it. So I'm watching the Harlequin series, which is very good.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. So what else was on my, I live in the UK and there's a lot of weird UK shows that haven't made it to America.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The most popular show here is a show called Line of Duty, which is about what we would call internal affairs. They call them anti-corruption, like police unit. And they're investigating bent coppers. Oh, I'm trying to get the bent coppers. That's like all they say every episode is bent coppers. But like the genius of it is every season there's like one bad guy and the bad guy is somebody famous. So like last season it was Kelly MacDonald. One season it was Tandy Newton.
Ooh,
some of them they're all like British you know, like big British actors.
Now, does it like give it away in like a Law and Order sort of way? Like you see the famous person, you know they're bad, or is it set up pretty early? So it's not
Well, it's like the bad, the famous person is involved in like the case that they follow over the 6 or 7 episodes.
Right.
But they're not always bad. There's okay. a question of, the question is, are they bent or aren't they bent? And this unit like investigates them and they go undercover and there's like, super twists and turns and okay. it's like very unbelievable but also crazy, but like it's on the when it's on TV it's on the cover of the newspaper, like everybody's like Line of Duty, like a third of all English people watch Line of Duty on Sunday nights when it's on, like it's
wow
massive.
I feel like Brian, tell me, correct me if I feel like that's something that happens, like monocultural shows happen in the UK far more frequently still than happens yes. in America now, right? Like,
no,
like you'll yes. get a show where like a third of the country is like tuning in and talking about it at the same time. That just doesn't happen here anymore.
Yeah, well, because there's like 6 channels and everybody has like BBC and it, there are tons of people that just put on the BBC and watch whatever is on it.
Yeah.
And so, but then some do better than others. But Line of Duty is a good one. It's on like Hulu or something, but it's okay. not, it hasn't made an impact in America. It's by the guy who made it is named Jed Mercurio. And he made that Bodyguard show with yeah. Richard Madden.
Yeah, I love that show. Yeah. yeah.
So it's very much in that vein. Dairy Girls is a great show. I think that's on Netflix, which mm-hmm. is like yes. a comedy about Irish girls in the 90s. There's a ton of crazy reality shows here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. And it is savage. There's a show called Your Face or Mine, and it's on Comedy Central here, which is very different from American Comedy Central. But so if there's 2 comedians that host it, Jimmy Carr and Catherine Ryan, who had that show, The Duchess on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so they get a couple, it's like a guy and a girl. And then they ask like, okay, guy, according to the studio audience, like, is your girlfriend hotter than these celebrities? And so they show a bunch of celebrities and then he has to say like, if the audience thinks she's hotter than these celebrities.
Oh my God.
So then after the celebrity and they like, for as right he is, he accrues money.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next round is your girlfriend hotter than these live women standing in front of you?
Oh
like,
my God.
According to the audience. And then he has to say like, yes or no. And if he's right, whatever.
And the trigger, like the according to the audience thing is so tricky too, because you think like, oh yeah, he's just going to say yes to stay in good graces with his girlfriend, but it's according to the audience, not according to him.
Oh, wow.
Twist.
Right. And so it's like, obviously he thinks she's hot because it's his girlfriend.
Right.
But the audience might think that Scarlett Johansson, a picture of Scarlett Johansson is hotter than this girl. So he has to say like, oh, they're going to say Scarlett Johansson is hotter than my girlfriend.
Hmm.
But
oh,
the
my God.
Last round is someone they know. And so it's like, his ex-girlfriend, her
oh,
best friend, her God. Sister.
Like, this is brutal.
And then he has to be, and that's like the big money. And then he has to be like, yeah, everyone thinks my ex is hotter than you. Like, sorry. Like to
oh
her face
God.
With comedians, like making fun of them. And I'm like, why on earth would you go on the show? It's like that tattoo show that Snooki does on MTV.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Uh-huh.
Why would you do
why
this?
Why would you do this?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
I gotta get eyes on that.
I don't know okay. that these are necessarily my favorite shows, but like as a student of the reality television arts and sciences, as I'm sure you guys are, yes. I'm like, I want to watch all of these yeah. shows. And
speaking of Brian, are there any reality shows that were on your almost list? We could quickly tick through any reality shows that just didn't make it.
RuPaul's Drag Race. I mean, sure. genius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm a huge Drag Race fan. I've written about that on and off. The UK Drag Race is fantastic. If you want to check that out, I highly recommend it.
Great.
The like original seasons of Project Runway is I was mm-hmm. obsessed with, and that's what got me watching Bravo, which is what led me to The Real Housewives. So mm-hmm. thank you, Project Runway. Yeah. Okay. Oh, The Circle. Have you watched
yeah.
The Circle?
Yes.
I've both seasons. Both yeah. seasons.
I only watched the first season.
Have you watched the UK The Circle?
No.
No.
That started it all though, right? That came first. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I find the UK The Circle better.
Okay.
Personally. And I even applied to be on the UK The Circle because I love it so much. It's such a like genius reality show. And then they canceled it in the UK. And so I was like, oh well, now I can get to be on reality TV.
Brian, before we move on to your criteria, there's one show on your almost list that you sent over that my friend Caroline would kill me if I didn't bring up. She's also a big fan of yours. Talk to me a little bit about Designing Women.
Oh my God. Designing Women is another show. When my husband gets drunk, he likes to have YouTube night, and which is he sits there and makes me like pull up YouTube clips. And yeah. It's like a melange of like old TV shows, music videos, like hot guys doing stupid shit. He's also really into fart jokes. So there'll be like lots of farts and like Jackass and like things like that. And so I just like pull up videos, and there's always like a monologue from Designing Women talking about like AIDS or the Night's Light went out in Georgia or, but it was just like such a good show in that it took on issues, but was also really funny, but also very much of a time. And all the actresses on it were amazing. Mm-hmm. Jean Smart, I was on the Jean Smart train for a long time because of Designing Women. She was also on a show with Joe from Facts of Life where she played like a fake Martha Stewart, and it lasted like 10 episodes. And I think I'm the only person that watched it, but it was hilarious and amazing. But I loved her on 24. Yeah. Like I would watch her on anything. And of course I love Hacks and Mare of Easttown. And I was a big Watchmen fan. Watchmen's another excellent show.
It is. We're in the Jean Smartisance. It's absolutely wonderful.
See, I don't think it was the Jean Smartisance because for me, she never left.
She never left.
She's always been here.
She never left.
I know. Like anytime she's in it, I'm like, oh, Jean Smart's in it. Samantha Who is such an underrated show.
Who was the star of that show? That was
Christina Applegate.
Jean Smart, that's right. Christina Applegate and Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's
under
like,
the
oh my God.
Show.
I love that show. So like, I love a really bitchy sitcom, like Designing Women, Golden Girls, Samantha Who, The Bitch in Apartment 23. Like,
oh, good one. I like
Fab
that.
Fab.
That
oh my God. My husband's, one of his forever shows would be absolutely fabulous. And so that's usually part of YouTube night too, is like Ab Fab highlights. And he knows all the words and he like sings along. So like,
I love it. I don't know, lip syncs
to Patsy and Adina.
Well, speaking of forever shows, should we get into the criteria?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So we asked you to pick six shows in total with two shows in each of the three categories. And so those categories are best, favorite, and forever. So your best shows are the ones that you think are the most artistic, well executed, just the overall best made shows you've ever seen. Your favorite shows are the ones that hold a place near and dear to your heart and just mean something to you personally. And the forever shows are if you die tomorrow and in the afterlife, you get to choose two shows to watch in order from pilot to finale over and over for infinity. What are they?
That's right. Now, there are a couple quick rules here, points of order. So for each category, we have you choose from the three overall genres of TV, which are drama, comedy, and unscripted. And unscripted means everything from reality shows to documentary series, as long as there's more than one episode, just can't be a one-off. And as I think we've already covered pretty much, there's no guilty pleasures here. If you like something, we're going to talk about it. Let's get excited about it. The only other thing is you can't double up on a genre in any category. So if you were to pick an unscripted show in your best category, the other must be drama or comedy. Make sense?
Yes.
All right. Let's get into it. So what is your first best show? We'll do one at a time.
Okay, my first best show is The Wire, which, like Game of Thrones, when it was on, I would watch all the previous seasons again, you know, to get ready for it, which, when The Wire was on, was much more difficult because you didn't have a DVR, there was no streaming, like, you had to wait, like, HBO would rerun them, and so I would have to set up my combination TV VCR to record it on a tape.
Yeah, you had to tape a marathon, right?
Wow.
And part of the reason why it is such a great show is, you know, now everybody is talking about stories of people of color and diversity and, you know, different ways of life and queer characters. And like The Wire did it way before anybody was talking about it. And it was such a diverse cast. I had a joke for many years that if you see a Black person on television, they were on The Wire.
Yeah.
Like, because every like Black actor working in Hollywood was on The Wire at one point or another. And, but there were a lot of queer people on the show, and there was a queer lesbian of color was one of the major characters. So I was writing a lot about it for The Washington Blade, and it was set in Baltimore, which we kind of covered. And so I would do lots of interviews with the cast and, you know, the directors, things like that.
And talk about queer character. Omar Little was just.
Yeah.
I mean, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah. Such a reveal.
Such a reveal. Such an excellent character. And that's the thing is it was like, and in those days, it was still like Will and Grace queer as folk era where people's queer characters, queerness was still very much like the center of who they were. Whereas this, it was like Omar had all this other shit going on, but also, you know, he was in love with this guy and that's what led him to do what he did. And, and so it was just such a great show. And it's, you know, everybody says it's like a novel. Yeah, I get it. It's true. but it was just like, the point it makes is how we're all interconnected as humans and how things that I do impact people across town that I don't even realize that it's happening to. And there were just such great, I mean, any good drama or comedy is about characters, just like any good reality show is about its cast. And it was, it just had so many great characters. It was funny. It was heartbreaking. It was, I haven't rewatched it in many years. I wonder how I would feel about like pagers and cell phones and like the payphone, you know, like the whole first season is about this like payphone and
like burner phones and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I couldn't imagine like telling a kid like, oh my God, you have to watch The Wire. And they're like, what is this thing that's mounted to a wall that you have to like push buttons?
It's like all of the technology is antiquated.
Yeah, but I just think it's such a well-made, excellent show, and it ended like at just the right time. The finale was fantastic. It was also on, it was airing at the same time as 6 Feet Under, which was another one of my almost shows, which was so great. And I think 6 Feet Under probably has the best finale of any show I've ever seen. Like even thinking about it now, it makes you want to cry.
And I can't hear the song without...
Yeah. And so like just that era of HBO, I was also like in my early 20s and I lived in an apartment where we had free cable, and by free, I mean pirated, and it also included HBO. So thank you. Yeah.
That's amazing.
For whoever was paying for HBO that we were stealing it from.
Thank you, neighbors.
So I love The Wire. And when people are always like, oh, I'm looking for a show, I'm like, have you watched The Wire? Would you consider this? And oh, it was just such a good show. I love it so much. And it's just so well made and well written. And I don't feel like anything David Simon has done since has really like reached the bar of The Wire.
I agree.
But like,
no, Treme was good, but it wasn't to the level, you know?
No. But I also, I mean, when it's the best show, I don't know how you even.
Like, how do you top it?
Get up there. Yeah. But like, totally overlooked by the Emmys in its time and very underwatched. I would like to think that more people have found it as the years have gone on, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I think it is. But it's one of the more often talked about shows on this podcast anyway. So I think it's still, the staying power is there. More people have found it, even though it was a little underwatched.
Yeah, I found it after it was on, because I remember when it was on, I was just like, I don't want to watch a crime show. But then my one of my best friends like gave me the DVD. She was like, you have to watch the show. It's so good. And I started it. And then my husband was like, you haven't seen The Wire? How have you not seen that? He's like, I'm rewatching it. We're watching it together. I'm watching it with you. And I got like so into it. And I was like, I can't believe that I wasn't watching this before. Because I think also like I kind of conflated it with Oz.
Yeah.
Which was like not for me. You know.
No, it was not good. There were a lot of hot guys fucking on it, but other than that, it's not nearly as good.
But yeah, no, but I love The Wire as a best pick. What is your second best pick, Brian?
My second best pick is also around the same time on HBO, and it's The Comeback. And
yes.
So good.
So I will preface this as saying I am much more of a fan of a traditional sitcom than that like cringy, like I can't watch The Office. I loathe Ricky Gervais. I hate Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Wow. Like, okay. Hot takes. Okay.
I can't handle like any of that except for The Comeback. And I think maybe it's because it's a lady and maybe because it's reality TV, which are, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it was just such a good show, such an amazing character. Mm-hmm. Lisa Kudrow is so amazing in it. Like, it was hot on the heels of both Friends and Sex and the City for her and Michael Patrick King. It's such a fully realized character and like really looking into the dark side of reality television, which is part of what I love about The Real Housewives and all the other shows that I like, particularly The Real Housewives. And you see so much Valerie Cherish and all the housewives and wanting to be famous and doing anything for it.
Well, I got it.
Valerie?
Yeah.
Could you do it again?
Sure, yeah. Was there a technical
No, I just, I think it could be a little bigger, you know, more excited.
Can do. Okay, ready? Yeah. Well, I got it. And I thought it would...
Could you do it again?
You know, Jane, I'm sorry, I don't want to look like an idiot, you know, and this is supposed to be reality.
Yeah, well, I just think that your reality could be more excited. Just one more, just for safety.
Fine. Yeah, okay.
Bigger.
Okay, you know what, Jane, you and I have to talk. Can you turn the cameras off, please?
No.
Oh, it's just so good. And what I also love about it is that we got to see her 10 years later when they redid it.
Yeah.
And then they just did one season and then they were like, okay, now we're done. Like, I wish, like, I love the idea.
The self-control, it was just out of this world.
And I also love the idea of like checking in on these people and being like, okay, what impact has all that? And that's one of the things that fascinates me about Real Housewives is the women who have left the show and what impact that fame, et cetera, has had on them. Mm-hmm. And we don't get to see that on Housewives because once they're off the show, they're kind of invisible. And so you get to see that with Valerie Cherish and have it come again. And Lisa Vanderpump and Lisa Rinna are on the comeback.
Yeah.
So, you know, Easter eggs. But, and it was so interesting that the second time it... The first season was so prescient about what was going to happen with reality television, with Housewives, Kardashians, all of that stuff, how it's made, what it does to people, how we're obsessed with it. And to see her come again in where everything it presaged, whatever, in its first season had come to pass was just like so amazing. Oh my God, in the end, the very end.
Yes.
No spoilers.
I just want to like tear up and it's just so good. And I don't know how you could be a fan of reality television and not love the comeback. And it's just so funny and it's so great and it's so sad and again, so human. But I don't need to see that as a refrain in my household that we use all the time. I don't need to see that. It's just such a good show. And it, in the first season, it's like her and the showrunner and they have this toxic relationship. Yeah. And when she finally like gives him what's coming to him, it's just so amazing. And it was like, and even thinking about that, it's pre-Me Too, you know, all the Scott Rudin stuff and like showing, you know, women in Hollywood trying to fight this very unfair system. But in a really humane, hilarious way.
Well, and it was also just great to see a character who, like, a woman of a certain age. That get, and like how they dealt with that and how she was really getting like kind of pushed out. And that's, and in terms of like the Housewives, I feel like that's one of the things that I love about the Housewives.
Yes.
That, like, obviously, like, I am not the age of the Housewives. I would be like a younger housewife. I'd be like a Leah or a Tim.
You'd be like a Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah. I'm like more of like a, probably like Southern Charm. No, just kidding. I'm Black. But I do love that, like, this is a place where we can see, like, because we don't, women don't disappear after we turn 45.
Yeah.
Like, we're still here.
And that's one of the points that I always make about Housewives is, you know, there are a lot of people that don't like Housewives, reality television is ruining the world, blah, blah, blah. But there are very few places on television, certainly in scripted television, where you're going to see women of a certain age interacting with each other. I mean, other than like Designing Women, The Golden Girls, and Grace and Frankie, that's kind of, you know, other than that, it's The Housewives. So it might not be the best depiction, but at least it is a depiction of The Housewives.
Yeah, no, I'm down. Awesome. So, Brian, your best shows are The Wire and The Comeback, which are great, great choices.
Yeah. Very of a moment. Of a moment HBO, which I really love.
Very of. And it was, oh my God. That,
get like, it done, lived... early 2000s HBO. Get it done.
Oh my God. Like every show, even fucking John from Cincinnati, I watched. Like,
wow.
You know, like... Yeah, I watched them all, and they were all so good. It's because they had, like, six shows, and every one of the shows was, like, amazing.
They had the care, yeah.
Yeah.
They were getting it done. Well, let's move on to your favorite shows. What is your first favorite show?
Okay, my first favorite show is Twin Peaks.
Ooh.
Which I don't know why my parents were allowing me to watch this, but when it was on originally, I was maybe like 10 or 12-ish. And I was, like I said, I was an indoor kid. All I did was like read comic books and watch television. And when Entertainment Weekly started, I convinced my mom, I was like, will you get me a subscription to this? Like, whatever. And so I like, fucking devoured that shit. And that was, you know, this was pre-internet. I grew up in a small town in Connecticut. Like, this was how I discovered everything. It was how I discovered the real world, you know. And so I would read it cover to cover. I would read every review. I'd read every article. I was just obsessed with it. And so when Twin Peaks came out, it was like such a big thing. And so I started watching it. And I don't even know how I got to stay up until like 10 o'clock as like a 10-year-old, but I managed. And I was just
Twin Peaks at 10 years old. That has there been like lasting trauma from watching Twin Peaks at 10 years old?
100%.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. So Bob at the end of the bed, like even thinking about it now, like traumatizes me. And I grew up, you know, in a small town in Connecticut, lots of woods, lots of blowing branches and like trying to go to bed after Twin Peaks. I was like just traumatized. But I was like very into soap operas when I was a kid. I used to I would tape the soap operas and I watched them every day. And I was very into comic books and like all this serialized storytelling in these kind of worlds and like magic and magic realism and all this stuff. Yeah. And so I was just obsessed with Twin Peaks and I was follow the media coverage relentlessly. And they were
So I was just going to ask about this. So my experience with Twin Peaks is I watched it first in college. I went to school for TV, radio, and film. It was my major at Syracuse. And Bob Thompson, like this, like renowned, culture writer.
I interviewed him for my Housewives book. I've interviewed him a fucking million times. He's like, knows everything about television history ever.
Yeah. So he was a professor for this class called The History of Primetime TV. And he had us watch a couple episodes of Twin Peaks as part of like, this was a moment, right? Like you throw a rock in and, you know, like you'd hit someone that was like, oh, who killed Laura Palmer? Right. Like who killed Laura Palmer was like a craze. It was one of these early, like what shows now aspire to do. Like you need like the mayor of Easttown, you know, undoing whodunit sort of thing that like Twin Peaks really like had. So like my question for you was, even at, you know, 10, 11, 12, when the show was on, were you aware of that? Of like, oh, this is a thing that everyone's talking about that has taken over the zeitgeist, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was like such a voracious reader, especially of Entertainment Weekly, and they were like covering it.
Yeah.
You know, because it was such a big thing and it, you know, was nominated for so many Emmys and you know, that's when you used to have to watch commercials. There were commercials for it all the time. Right. And so, yeah, I totally knew. And, you know, there were like spinoff books, like there was like the Laura Palmer's Diary book. And I like bought all those.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like a Twin Peaks super fan. And even the second season where it got kind of crazy, I was super into because I was into the weirdness of it. And like, just that magic world is always a thing I've really been into in the same way like Lost or Game of Thrones, like into those kind of universes. And so I, you know, because I just really wanted to get out of my awful small town. And so I just like imagine maybe somebody
I'm gonna go to this awful,
in another
small
awful small town
where weird stuff goes down.
Diane, 11:30 a.m., February 24th. Entering the town of Twin Peaks, 5 miles south of the Canadian border, 12 miles west of the state line. Never seen so many trees in my life. The As W.C. Fields would say, I'd rather be here than Philadelphia. 54 degrees on a slightly overcast day. Weatherman said rain. You could get paid that kind of money for being wrong 60% of the time. It'd be working. Oh, Diane, I almost forgot. Got to find out what kind of trees these are. They're really something.
I feel like I remember when Twin Peaks was coming on, and I never got into it. And then at maybe the end of high school is when I started being like, I want to watch really good shows. I'm going to watch Twin Peaks. But I started with Fire Walk With Me.
Ooh.
And I was so confused. Yeah. I was like, wait, what is this?
I made my father take me to see Fire Walk With Me because I like couldn't get in without like a parent. And he was like, what the fuck is this? And what is wrong with you? Like, what? It was like the most uncomfortable viewing experience of my life.
I can only imagine.
Wow.
Yeah, like that. So I feel like that was kind of my Twin Peaks experience, because I thought that Twin Peaks was going to be like X-Files.
Yeah,
that was what I was kind of comparing it to. And then I was like, what? I'm sorry. Who? What? Yes. Okay. Like, that was me watching the whole thing. But I do feel like if I was to go back now, like as an adult with like context of like kind of how you make TV and what stories you're trying to tell and like what filmmakers are trying to do and like seeing what their POV is, I feel like I would enjoy it now.
So I loved it. I had watched it several times over the course of my lifetime. And then when the reboot was happening, I was like very excited.
Yeah. So the reboot was Twin Peaks, The Return. This was a couple years ago. They brought it to Showtime, right?
Yeah.
I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen it, but I remember the coverage of it. And like all the critics are like, this is the best TV I've seen all year. This is the top of all these best lists. Like it was critically acclaimed when it was on. What were your thoughts?
My thoughts are they're all wrong, and I think it's awful.
Yes, let's get into it.
Yeah,
So I like rewatched the whole thing. I was so excited about it, and I've been a big David Lynch fan like ever since Twin Peaks, and like I rented Eraserhead like on VHS, like at the store. You know, I was like so into it, and I would like watch all the movies that all the people in the show had been in, and I was like obsessed. And so I rewatched the whole thing. I was like ready. And then like David Lynch, as his career has gone on, it's just gotten more and more like outre. And yeah. It's like the same reason I hate jazz. Like I need a melody. Like I need there to be something containing the madness. And I think that the original Twin Peaks, it was, you know, built to be like a soap opera and a kind of dissection of soap operas and nighttime soap operas. And it had the network being like, girl, you can't do that. Like you need to have it contained a little bit. Right. Whereas Showtime was like, do whatever you want. And then it's just like weird shit, fucking tone poems and like craziness that doesn't make any sense. And where is he? And like, is he this person? Is he that person? I don't know what's going on. There was this one amazing episode that's kind of about like the creation of Bob, the like evil, you know, spirit that lurks within all of us. And, you know, I will say as a young person watching Twin Peaks, I didn't nearly understand like even a fraction of it. Like half the time I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I love this because it's fucking weird. But like, as I grew up, I was like, okay, I get it more and more. And, you know, and David Lynch was always kind of like, well, it's like whatever you think it's about. And I sort of developed my own theories about what I think that the show was about, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But then The Return, it just like lost it. And I don't think I even finished it. I was just like, this makes no sense. I don't know where it's going. I can't handle you. This is too far afield for me.
Yeah. Wow. When reboots go wrong.
But like, I mean, I get, you know, there's a very certain type of critic. And if you follow any of them on Twitter, they are all friends and they all talk to each other and they all like the same things. And most of them are white and straight and dudes. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And they're very into that. Like, it's not a TV show. It's a 12-hour film. First of all, fuck you.
Yeah, no,
second
thank
of
you.
All, it's not that good. So I think they were all the ones who were like, this is amazing. I love jazz. And I'm like, right. No, like, you know, give me a Britney Spears remix. You know, that's yeah. like, it's, you know, like you can take this thing and like redo it and make something new out of it. But I need to be able to sing along. And right. I am not singing along with this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, I love the way yeah. you put that, though. That makes a ton yeah. of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe I feel like I should finish it now that I'm like talking about it and remembering how much I loved it and how much it meant to me. I should at least see her through to the end.
Yeah. Did it just stay on for the one season?
Yeah, just one.
Yeah. You know, I think he's a genius, but I feel like I want David Lynch to direct someone else's script. Like I feel like he needs to be corralled. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit where it's something like Blue Velvet and his earlier movies where he still had to please a studio are his better work than when there are.
You know what, Brian? Let's have David Lynch direct a Damon Lindelof script and see what happens.
I mean, 100%. Right? That would be like, oh my God, you could not keep me away from that. Yeah. That would be so good.
That would be wild.
I'm signing up.
Yes. All right, we should move on. So your next favorite show, Brian, what do you got?
Is Survivor, which I am obsessed with.
Oh, good one. We haven't had this on the podcast yet. This is so exciting.
Survivor is such a great show. And I mean, I talk about it a bit in my book about the Housewives, and is that like the airing of Survivor really opened the floodgates to reality television in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was, and you know, I was a huge Real World fan. I was obsessed with Who Wants to Marry a Multimillionaire.
Oh, wow. Like, sure.
All of those like proto reality shows. Yeah. Like I was all in from the beginning. And when Survivor was on, I was like, this is genius. I am obsessed with this. And I think that like Survivor and like Television Without Pity and Salon.com, like that really started the modern recap kind of culture, I think, in a way. And I was reading all those, and I was totally obsessed with it. And it's just such a great show. It's so entertaining. It's been on for 40 seasons. It still surprises me.
It's never going to stop. It'll be on forever.
Never going to stop. I mean, I am just worried who is going to take over after Jeff Probst dies.
Yeah. And we got another 20 years before, you got a while even before that happens.
I know. Well, and it's like it ebbs and flows, it goes up and down, but it's always one season away from another groundbreaking season. And I just think that, and the game has changed so much that it's become a lot more complicated. And I don't know that I like the modern gameplay as much as the original, because it was really just about like groups of people. But yeah, Survivor's great. And my husband was never into it. And it was always like my thing. I've never written about it. I've never really covered it in any meaningful way. So it was always something that was like mine as a fan. And I have a few friends that are really into it. And we would go over each other's houses to watch the finales or the premieres, and we talk about it and who do we love and who do we hate. And so I really loved it for that. But I will say, speaking of Jeff Probst, though I love Survivor, and if I were ever going to be on a reality show that's not The Circle, I would be on Survivor.
Okay.
Mostly for the weight loss plan. but I hate Jeff Probst.
Ooh,
and like, I think that part of my love for Survivor and part of the reason why I still watch it is how much I hate Jeff.
It's fun to hate watch. Oh, it's a valuable part of watching some things.
He drives me crazy. It's like anytime he's making fun of somebody in a challenge, it's a woman. Like he's just like so sexist. Whenever he talks about his favorite players, he never mentions Sandra Diaz-Twine, the only person to win twice. It's always these like dudes. He's really into these like super macho dudes and all these like Christian-y people from America that are on it. And I'm like, you are all stupid. And he likes a kind of gameplay that I don't necessarily enjoy, like a very like domineering, like alpha male kind of, I win a lot of challenges and I find idols. And I'm like, that's easy. Like, I think what's more impressive to me is the people who I identify with, like the outsiders and the weirdos who somehow find their way all the way through without winning a single thing, but have a sort of social mastery over these like small groups of people and the ever shifting dynamics and the game and all of that. But yeah.
Do you have a favorite season or a favorite winner?
Oh, well, Sandra Diaz-Twine is my all-time favorite. I think she's amazing. Parvati Shallow, who won, is also like an all-time great. Cerie Fields never won. The only woman booted off without having a vote cast against her because she didn't have a fucking stupid hidden immunity idol.
So, any votes cast for Ty, Aubrey, Sarah, Troyzan will not count. You could not vote for Culpepper. He had immunity, which means, Cerie, it doesn't matter what votes are in the urn, because the only person who can receive votes
is me.
Is you. And for what it's worth, not a single vote in here has your name on it.
Usually it's like the people I love are the gays and the ladies, which I mean, welcome to my world. And, but like the heroes versus villains season is one of the all time best. Fans versus favorites is great. There are a few, they call them like blood versus water seasons. Do you know about these?
I watched one of those. Yeah. So like I watched early seasons and then kind of fell off because, you know, just there was a lot more TV and, you know, college, blah, 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 blah. And then I popped back in. I was living with a roommate who is a loyal, will watch every season.
Yeah.
And I ended up watching a blood versus water season. I enjoyed it, but I didn't feel like hooked back in. And I feel like I would love your opinion on like, I feel like these later seasons, and my former roommate, you know, I get a lot of this from him, but like a lot of, for lack of a better term, like producer bullshit, a lot of twists, a lot of over formatting. Yeah.
Yes.
How do you feel about that as seasons have progressed?
I don't love it, particularly like I'm a big brother fan. Mm-hmm. And you also see this on Love Island, where Love Island is happening and they're filming it. And then the next day you're watching the episode. And like same with Big Brother, they're filming it as it's airing. And so you see them course correcting and it's like, oh, we're going to have a challenge and make and save this person or help this person or do whatever. You see them like manipulating the game in a way that Survivor seemed like it had some sort of integrity, for lack of a better word, like that the game is like sacrosanct and we're not going to fuck with it. But then there was one season, this guy Ben won, spoiler alert, and he was like a vet and he was a veteran and very macho beard, like the kind of guy Jeff Probst loves. And every week he found a hidden immunity idol every week. And that's how he got through to the end. And it was like, I felt like you were just putting these in Ben's face so that he will stay on the show and win. And once I felt like that, I would, and that's one of the things I really don't like. And then there's like super idols and this and whatever.
Yeah. It was always a hidden idol, a secret idol thing. Like you mentioned, like someone went home simply because they didn't find a fucking idol. They weren't voted against, but they still went home because they didn't do some like scavenger hunt or something, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's too, I also hate the ones where it's like, oh, you have to go to this island and then you can fight your way back. Or like the game is perfect. Like the game is great. Like just trust in the game. So like, I think it would be more interesting if there was a cost to using a hidden immunity idol where it's like, if you use a hidden immunity idol, then you can't vote in the next tribal council or something like that. Because now it's just like idol. And there's this new
it's
thing
like a
where
cheat
they
code.
Like where they whisper at tribal council and they go to tribal council and then they whisper and they all whisper. And it's like, you can tell Jeff loves it because it seems so dramatic, but then you're like, what the fuck is going on? Why are these people voting like this? I don't understand what's happening. Like, yeah. So I'm not a big fan of all the twists and turns. I always say that they should do a Survivor classic and just be like, here's the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's an immunity challenge. There's a reward challenge. You vote somebody out.
There are only three rules: outwit, outplay, and outlast. And that is it.
Like none of this idols, like, you know, none of this tribe swaps all the time and like crazy. Yeah. Like if your format is good enough, you don't need to do that. And and I think that people who have been watching the show for 40 seasons are going to keep watching it. Like, I don't think you need to worry too much about losing viewers at this point.
Yeah.
But what do I know? That's why I'm not Jeff Probst, and Jeff Probst is Jeff Probst.
Well, I will say Survivor is a big blind spot for me because while I love all reality TV, I never really got into it. One of my good friends, also named Brian, loves Survivor. Like, he loves Survivor so much that he does like Survivor like parties where like they like do their own Survivor, like they for like a weekend, right. Like they're on Survivor.
Yeah.
And he always like either wins or is very close to winning. And like he has tried to be on Survivor for like years. And I'm always like, I wish I could use my like TV connections to get you on Survivor because you'd be so good.
Get to work.
I know. It's like, what am I doing here? It's like, if I'm working on TV, why am I not getting my friend on Survivor? But I feel like maybe I should like give it a try. Cause it, also other friends of ours that we all like really love, specifically Housewives of Potomac,
which is like the best of the housewives at this point,
but they love Survivor and Big Brother and they're like, you guys have to start watching. And I was like, okay, well, like maybe I'll go check it out. But like I feel like you guys are presenting a compelling case for Survivor.
And I feel like with Survivor is like you can just start, like you mm-hmm. don't need to go back and revisit or, you know, mm-hmm. it's like there will be some vagaries of the gameplay because now it's so advanced. But yeah, you could totally start. Anyway.
Well, look, we got your favorites, which are Twin Peak and Survivor.
Yeah.
So let's move on to your forever shows. So these are the shows you're watching front to back, over and over. You can switch between the two. You don't have to just watch everything like all the way through. Like you could watch an episode of this, watch an episode of that. But what is your first forever show, Brian?
My first forever show is The Real Housewives of New York because it's been on for like 13 seasons and counting. Mm-hmm. So there are so, and they make like 20 something episodes a mm-hmm. season. So I won't get sick of it. Mm-hmm. And also like The Real Housewives of New York are the best of The Real Housewives. And I mean, I wrote a book about The Real Housewives. I couldn't not have a Housewives show like on my list.
I know. I was wondering where the Housewives are going to end up on your list.
And Real Housewives of New York is my favorite in general, but right now I think Real Housewives of Potomac is the mm-hmm. best yeah. of them. Mm-hmm. This current season of Real Housewives of New York sucks, but whatever. But I mean, New York always delivers. The third season of The Real Housewives of New York, where they go to Scary Island, where Bethany mm-hmm. and Jill have their big falling out.
Something's happened here.
We all think you need to get help. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, because I don't like you.
That's not an illness.
Your dad passed away and you're like here? It's creepy. All
right. Why are you so creepy?
It's totally creepy.
She needs to get help.
You know, I went away as soon as my mother passed away. My mother died on a Friday.
Don't ever tell anybody that, Ramona. That is a.
The four of us are actually sane and she's crazy and now we're picking on her. Okay?
Okay, let's
stop. She has a problem.
I feel like you're trying to kill me every night and I threw up.
She's paranoid.
The night before I came. Because I don't want to be a part of this.
Go to sleep! Go to sleep! Okay. You're crazy! Go to sleep!
No, don't be mean to her.
Bethany and Ramona have their fight on the Brooklyn Bridge. Like, you're in high school, and while you're in high school, I'm in Brooklyn fight with Alex McCord. Like, oh my God. The Brooklyn Fashion Weekend with Ramona and the Bug Eyes and Turtle Time.
That was all in season three?
That's all in season three.
Wow.
Like, season three is like the best. And so Real Housewives of New York, and so then after season four, they kind of rebooted it. And then it had a bunch of great seasons with Carol Radziwill and Bethany and they're falling out. And then Dorinda comes along and she's great. And then the Countess goes to jail and... I mean, and it's about Tom and everything. And Sonia Morgan is my favorite Real Housewife and she's just hilarious. And I think that that's what people miss a lot about the Real Housewives, particularly New York, Atlanta, and Potomac, is that the women are funny. Like they're mm-hmm. really, really funny. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you get the drama, you get the humor, you get people you love, you get your relationships with them. And you also get, there are such great characters like Jill Zarin, who fame destroys, and Sonia Morgan, who's like living in the past, like a Tennessee Williams heroine. And, you know, Bethany, whose family fucked her up so bad, and she can dissect everybody in the world and tell them what's wrong with them, but she can't do the same to herself. Mm-hmm. And she just ends up making the same mistakes over and over again. It's just, I mean, you couldn't write a drama as good as The Real Housewives of New York.
Wow.
They're so, I mean, it's, New York is one of my favorites. I think my all-time favorite is probably, it's a tie between Potomac and Atlanta, but I've been on New York, like, since the jump. I mean, I've been on all the Housewives since the jump. I feel like the only one I never watched was Miami, but I've watched all, like since, like, the OC, like, because I also had free cable.
Miami is worth your time.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, ooh. And I think underrated. Okay. And the third season gets a little dicey, but Leah Black is one of the all-time great housewives. And the fight, there's a big fight between Adriana and Joanna Krupa, who is on season two, that is like also excellent. Like, okay. Yeah, I highly recommend Miami, and it's coming back. So.
Okay, and the Housewives All-Stars?
Housewives All-Stars,
I'm watching.
I have low expectations.
But yeah.
Wait, hold on. So there's going to be an All-Stars season of Housewives? Tell me, what is this? What's happening?
Yeah, it's going to be on Peacock, and it's Teresa Giudice and Melissa Gorga from New Jersey, Kyle Richards from Beverly Hills, Luann De Lesseps and Ramona Singer from New York.
Wow.
Cynthia Bailey and Kenya Moore from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it, because there's no OC, no Dallas. No Salt Lake. So yeah, so that's the, so it's, they took them and put them in a house for 2 weeks in the Bahamas and filmed it all. But Andy Cohen has always said, like, when the ratings get bad, we're, and it's near the end, we're going to throw a bunch of them in a house and just film it. And
oh so, no. So does this make you nervous that this, like, the end is nigh?
100%.
Oh no. Because also, too, like, is this the end is night, or is this, hey, we have this streamer that we need to do a stunt thing for, so we're going to do a stunt thing for the streamer?
I think, I'm hoping that it's the latter, because yeah. I think that The Housewives is still strong, and I think that it could go on forever, and its fan base will stay with it as long as it's on the air. Yeah. But I will say, some of the older franchises, particularly New York, Orange County, and a little bit of Atlanta, are having some... I don't know if growing pains is the right word, but stagnation maybe.
Well, at this point, it's like, yeah, like, you know, is it time to start sunsetting some of these more long running in favor of giving, you know, Potomac and Salt Lake City more room to breathe and more newness, you know?
Or I think maybe moving some of the longer standing housewives like a Ramona Singer, Luann, Sonia Morgan onto another project. Mm-hmm. And recasting a new group of women, particularly maybe a more diverse group of women, in some of the cities, and, you know, getting back casts that have more organic dynamics than a bunch of coworkers, which is what it feels like. And it's particularly in Atlanta, it seems like Nene didn't want to be there. Kenya didn't want to be there. Portia didn't want to be there. Cynthia didn't want to be there. And then it's like, well, why am I watching you?
Yeah, what's
if
the
you
point?
Are like not giving me anything. Right. So.
And it's so much more fun to watch when you know that they are all actually friends and have that kind of authentic rapport. Like you get, and I think that's why we love Potomac. Like,
yes. Well, and I think there is something to be said for the women being together for a long time as coworkers and developing these relationships because obviously Ashley and Candace on Potomac aren't friends, but they've been forced together for so long, there's something there.
Yeah.
But also I love that Robin and Giselle are actually friends. Like I could watch them do anything together because I enjoy their friendship. I enjoy them liking each other. Mm-hmm. And I feel like on some of the other shows, you're not getting that as much.
Well, they've also tried to start forcing diversity, which like I applaud them for like, finally recognizing that shouldn't be all white cast, but also I feel like they're putting a lot on the shoulders of these new women, and it's just like it's not fair to make Ebony be the one that's got to like talk race. It's not fair to have Crystal be the one that has to like tell Sutton that she's a dumbass. Like
I agree, but at least on Beverly Hills there's other stuff it's like you get to have those discussions, but as a part of something larger. Yeah. Whereas on New York, there's nothing happening with the women because they've been together for so long in these like stagnant relationships. And so the only thing going on is Ebony talking about race. And so then you're like, oh, the season is boring. Maybe it's boring because Ebony's talking about race, but that's not it. It's just that the season is boring and Ebony's talking about race. Yeah. It's not like one causing the other.
Yeah. Also, you can't have a Housewives cast with only five women. Bravo, what are you doing? We need more people.
And you can't just like leave these women of color on their own in this cast of white ladies, as we saw with Tiffany in Real Housewives of Dallas, where they just all like teamed up on her. Yeah. So, yeah.
But well, I think that Roni is a great forever pick because there's just so much to see. And it's probably, I would say it's going to probably be on for at least another 4 to 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So by then we'll have like 20 seasons.
And it's like 25 episodes.
Yeah,
that'll be like 400 episodes of Roni. Yeah. Like that will get me through eternity.
That's pretty good. So Brian, what are you going to pair with Real Housewives of New York? What is your second forever show?
It's very, actually, they are really a compliment to each other. And it is Sex and the City, which again, like late 90s, early 2000s, HBO, thank you.
Yeah.
But it's just like my happy place. And sometimes I'm just like, I need to watch some episodes of Sex and the City right now. And like, it doesn't matter which ones, I'll just kind of pick them at random. Like I'll just like sit through 6 to 8 of them. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I feel like good and centered. And I think some of it is dated, particularly the fashions and some of the other stuff. But, you know, it's still things we talk about today. It's great relationships. It's, you know, you get the diverse groups of women and it's funny and it's light, but serious and heartwarming and all those things at once. And it just makes me feel like I'm in a nice warm blanket, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm of the age that Sex and the City was one of the reasons that I was like, I can't wait to move to New York City.
Same.
This is what my life is going to be. This is going to be great. I'm going to have an apartment just like Carrie's. And then I move up here and it's like, I live in the Gowanus Rehabilitation neighborhood and there's a lobster company on the second floor and the bathroom is all mirrors. But I'm a city girl now.
But I'm here. I am very nervous about the reboot.
That was going to be my next question, is what are you thinking about that?
Yeah, this is what I want to talk about. So Brian, so we've had this pick a couple times. It's a very popular criteria pick, actually, Sex and the City, and specifically in the forever category. So we've touched on it a little bit, but we haven't touched on the reboot much. So what I'm curious about is, what are your predictions? And that's different from what do you want to happen? What do you want to happen? And then what do you think is going to happen?
Well, like I said, when we were talking about the comeback, I like this idea, particularly, like we said, a group of women of a certain age interacting together. Like, I'm interested to see that on television and I'm interested to check back in on these characters. But if they were like reboot Sex and the City, Brian Moylan, and I were to write it, it would be like, okay, what are you dealing with now in middle age that their kids are teenagers or leaving the house, that Carrie has been in this relationship for 10 years, big, maybe passed away, who knows, like, you know, how, so, you know, it was about the issues we deal with in our late 20s, early 30s, finding our way through life. So what does that mean now? Like, how does it mean for older people? It's obviously not the same. They're not going to be like going to clubs and whatever, living it up. So how do you make a show like that that's honest about what middle age is like? And I think that would be a really interesting question. I am afraid because of the second movie.
Yeah.
And how awful the second movie was.
It's left a pretty bad taste.
To
get past, it seems.
Yeah. You know, I know Michael Patrick King is involved. I believe that he had written a third movie that then Kim Cattrall didn't want to do. And so I think this kind of repurpose those ideas for TV. So I'm interested to see what that looks like, but I'm curious as to who else was in the writer's room to try to maybe get us away from the shit that was in the second movie and towards someplace else, and maybe make it a little bit like, I can't see Sarah Jessica Parker now coming out to the plank, 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 plank. You know what I mean? Like, I need, like, I don't know. I need something else. And I don't know if it's going to deliver it. And also, I just feel like it's not going to please anybody. Like, nobody is going to be, it's not going to be what anybody wants it to be.
Ooh.
Because everybody is going to either want it to be exactly like the old one was, or some new thing, or I just think it's a losing battle. Like, I don't know that you should be messing with this. I mean,
would you rather not have it at all?
I am happy. I am happy with the series and first movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I like to pretend everything after Madonna's Confessions on a Dance Floor didn't happen. Like, I feel like everything after the first movie, I'm happy to just, like, ignore
right.
all of that and be like, this is something else. And now, like, I'm good. You know, like, I feel like it ended in a very good, complete place that I think you could do something interesting with it. And I get why they're doing it. But also, I feel like very much like hosting the Oscars, this is going to be a thankless task that will lead to nothing but ruin. So,
well, because it's like, are we going to see Carrie take any responsibility for all of the terrible financial decisions she made as a 35-year-old?
Or like, being just an awful person?
An awful person in general. Like, are we going to finally recognize that, like, oh, Carrie's nobody's favorite because she's a completely terrible, selfish friend?
Yeah. Are we going to acknowledge that the handbag she gave Louise from St. Louis is the ugliest handbag ever on the planet? Like, are you going to take responsibility for this? But I do think it will be interesting. Speaking of Madonna, you know, Madonna's like, why can't I have my titties out? You know, I'm still, you know, beautiful and whatever. And I agree with that. Like, I think that we should be interested in the interior lives of these women and that they still can be beautiful and fashionable and, you know, hip and with it in the way they were in their 30s. But I just don't know that it's gonna be able to recapture the same magic.
Yeah.
I'm still gonna watch every fucking episode though. Who am I fooling? So
exactly. Wow. So an incredible list. So to recap your criteria, The Wire and The Comeback are the best shows that Brian Moylan has ever seen. Twin Peaks and Survivor are his favorite shows of all time, and he would watch The Real Housewives of New York and Sex and the City forever. I love these categories. They all feel kind of themed, right? Like The Wire and The Comeback, very early 2000s HBO.
Yeah.
Twin Peaks and Survivor, very like monoculture moments, especially those first seasons. Mm-hmm. And then just an all New York City forever category. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's awesome. Well, Brian, before we sign off, we always have three lightning round questions. And so with these, it's kind of the opposite of the criteria. So don't overthink it. Just answer with the first thing that comes to mind, okay?
Yes. Okay.
So number one, what is a canceled show that you would revive if you could?
Oh, no one canceled show I would revive if I could is Happy Endings, which I think is just like totally underrated. And I mean, was just so genius. I love everybody on the show. I love Casey Wilson. Yeah, I would bring that back. And I think that it would still be like just as great.
They should bring that back.
It just got a new life on Netflix, right? Like it's on Netflix now. So hopefully people are discovering it and it'll have like a Schitt's Creek kind of renaissance.
I mean, fingers crossed.
I agree with you. I was having this yesterday. Someone asked me, what's the most underrated show in your opinion of all time? And like Happy Endings was in that conversation.
Mm. Oh my God. Hilarious. And just amazing. Yeah. Watch every episode. I loved it.
Okay. What's a show past or present that you wish you were recapping?
Oh, that's a good question.
This one's just for you. This one's just for you.
Yeah, just for you.
I mean, I would love to recap Love Island, but it's on every fucking day. Right. So that's like my whole life. Yeah. Usually if there's a show I want to recap, I can just be like, hey, I want to recap the show and they'll let me.
What about like a show from the past?
Ooh, a show from the past. I mean, I don't like doing comedies and dramas just because I find like it's like, here's what happened, girl. Right. and so I don't find that to be too interesting. I think that original Project Runway, I wish I was recapping like the first like five seasons that were on Bravo. That would have been fantastic.
Nice. Good one.
Awesome. And then last, what is a recent series that you've been obsessed with that people should check out?
Noah, I just watched, and I hate sports, and I usually hate shows about sports, but I watched Ted Lasso.
Yes.
So good.
It's like amazing. And it's like funny. The characters are great. It's very funny and it's heartwarming in this way that's not like overly sincere or emotionally manipulative, like This Is Us. It's just like so like sweet, and I just love them all. And as an American living in England, it also had like a sort of resonance to me.
Yeah.
People calling you wanker whenever you walk down the street.
A joke about how many countries are in this country. Four. It's like, I have thought the same thing, Ted Lasso.
Love that show. Yeah. Loyal listeners will know it was on my almost list. And it was one of the shows that Brandy then said that she will watch. So stay tuned. I think towards the end of the season, which we're getting close, we'll do a bit of a recap on a couple of those shows that we promised we'd watch. Ted Lasso being one of them. So hang around for more on that coming soon. And with that, Brian, this is a wrap on this episode of TV BFFs. Thank you so, so much for coming on. This was an absolute pleasure. Thank you to our guest, Brian Moylan. Brian, where can we find you and what are you up to?
You can find my book, The Housewives, the real story behind The Real Housewives, on thehousewivesbook.com and where all books are sold. I do a Housewives newsletter every 2 weeks. With Vulture, with news and recap highlights and original pieces that I write myself.
It's really good.
Thank you. And you can sign up for that at vulture.com/housewives. And you can find me on all social media platforms at Brian J. Moylan, except on Grindr, where my handle is Mustache Rides.
Love that. You can find the podcast on Instagram as well at TVBFF Podcast. You can email us at TVBFFpodcast@gmail.com. Please give us a rating, leave a review, follow the show, do all the things.
And we would love to hear from everybody. So send us your six. We want to know what your top six shows are of all time and where they fall on your own personal BFF criteria. So send us your picks and we'll share our favorites on the podcast. But until next time, goodbye, friends.
Goodbye. You arrive here at the critical moment.